Good morning, Wake Up HCC. Cris Oviedo here with you on this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful hot Tuesday morning. It is July the 13th. It is just about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'm really excited to be here with you because I have a great opportunity for you today. I have an invitation. I have a challenge. I wanted to say a rare opportunity, but it's not a rare opportunity. This is actually something that we can all do today. And it has been there for everybody all of this time, but not very many of us take this opportunity to become heroes. We've heard a lot of talk about heroes, you know, especially in this past year and a half with the pandemic. And I think we maybe didn't realize that in reality, we can all be heroes. And how can we do that? You might be saying, is like, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want to become a nurse. I don't want to go back to school. You don't have to do any of that actually to become a hero. You can just go and donate blood today. And that's how you can become a hero. You can save a life by donating blood. And it's an easy process. I've actually, you know, and my guest here, Miosha, I'm going to tell you, personal story. I've tried a few times and usually my iron is low. And so I have not been able to donate. I always want to do it. I sign up, I go, they prick my finger, they do this little test, and then they determine that I am not eligible at the time. And I just have not had it, you know, that personal experience. So I'm not a hero yet. I want to be, but I have not been able to do that yet. My husband has been, I guess he has been promoted to hero in hero school. He has been able to donate blood. And I've been there with him. I've seen what the process looks like. Here at HCC, we've had many drives before in the past. And it's very organized. It's non-threatening. It's really easy. It's really simple. So maybe that's something that's stopping you from doing it. Even though I have not been able to do it myself, I have been through the process at least, you know, partially through the process, as far as I have been able to go. I have seen people get through the process, and it's really, really easy. And it feels good. It feels good. And then you end up getting snacks at the end. So who doesn't like snacks, right? And that's always a plus. That's always a reason to maybe, you know, step up into hero school. But, you know, my guest this morning, Miosha Hudson, she is the regional diversity account manager at the Red Cross, the American Red Cross. And she is going to talk to us a little more about, you know, the Red Cross, what they are all about, their mission, their vision. We're going to talk about the importance of diversity also in donating blood and having diverse types of blood. We've been hearing a lot about that in the past year and a half. And I think we usually think of diversity as a social issue. Well, here we have a very real, you know, impact, right? A very science impact of diversity that just, in my opinion, brings diversity to an even higher level than it already was on my list. So Miosha, I want to thank you for joining me, and I want to welcome to our show. And I want to start just by getting to know you a little bit better. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what inspires you at work. Welcome and good morning.
Thank you, Cris. Thank you so much for having me. And I'll start by saying, and thank you all the listeners out there for tuning in and taking part in this really informative session this morning. So a little bit about myself. I've been with the American Red Cross about 5 years now. I'm actually a little bit over my fifth year, and I've really enjoyed being here and a part of this mission and this organization. And prior to my career transition into the American Red Cross, I actually spent a little over a decade in the telecommunications arena. Very high stress, very, very fast paced, just completely different culture. I enjoyed it. I loved it. Once again, it was an opportunity to interface and work directly with people. And that's something I've always enjoyed. So I did make the transition from kind of the corporate, very intense environment to the nonprofit environment, which can also be a lot of pressure because we're talking, you know, saving lives and providing relief for those around the world that are suffering. And so I felt like that was a much more worthy focus for my stress and my willingness to continue to, you know, every day give of myself and make an impact on people in the community. And in all of that, I'm also a mom. I have two children. I have a daughter who's attending Towson University and studying nursing. And I also have a 19-year-old son who graduated high school last year, and he's going through his discovery of, you know, no identified major, but 19, you know, just kind of trying a little bit of everything and learning his way in life. So that's a big part of my motivation and setting an example for them that giving of yourself and helping others is probably the most fulfilling thing that you can do in this world and in this life. So I'm just so grateful to have that opportunity here at the American Red Cross and lead by example with them. So that's a little bit about me and my background.
You know, that's a beautiful way of living your career, you know, with this idea of giving of yourself and working with a corporation that does exactly that in so many ways, and that encourages and gives the opportunity to others to join in that. Because it's one thing, I think, when we are able to give of ourselves, that then when we can expand that and involve community and bring others and encourage them to give back, it's even more fulfilling, as you were saying, and more rewarding, because it doesn't stop with us. It actually continues to live on to those around us. So let's talk about the Red Cross. You know, if you can help us understand, because, you know, I think that we have this idea, okay, the Red Cross is all about blood. But I know that you guys do more than just that. It's like, if I need to give blood, I just go to the Red Cross and that's it. But I think we don't have a full understanding of the entire mission and you know, what the Red Cross really, really does, and how, what a great impact and what a crucial entity you guys are in times of need in the world, not just in the States, but in the world. So tell us, help us really understand, you know, what the Red Cross really is.
Absolutely. And thank you for that, because I think you make a really excellent point, Chris, is that when people think the Red Cross, they generally think blood. Sometimes they might think disaster. We're typically the first on the ground, providing that relief for families and individuals facing some of their darkest days. But our mission as an organization is to prevent and alleviate human suffering. And that's in the face of emergencies or disasters, which are also emergencies. And we do that by mobilizing the power of volunteers, and of course, the generosity of our donors. So that kind of guides our focus and our mission and how we approach everyday impacting lives. And I think another important thing to share about the American Red Cross is that we actually have 5 lines of service. So like we just mentioned, many folks think of us as blood, or they think of us as kind of like being out there in the face of a natural disaster. But we actually were born on the battlefield. Our legendary and exceptional founder, Claire Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, actually started this mission and this vision and this commitment to humanity on the battlefield. So we're roughly 140 years in now of delivering our mission. And we started by supporting the service of armed forces. And then we expanded and evolved into disaster relief. And then we expanded and evolved into blood services. And we also provide training services, which is just a whole nother aspect of what we do. We do provide preparedness, health and safety training. So folks also think of CPR and associate that with the Red Cross. And then, of course, volunteer services. So those are our primary lines of services. So across those lines of services, we're impacting lives on so many levels. And if you look at what we do on a daily basis, because this mission is happening right now as we speak, every single day, over 30,000 people are assisted by the American Red Cross. And that equates to roughly 170 times a day, we're helping a family that's been affected by a disaster. 13,000 times a day, we are collecting blood. That means it pre-COVID, at least anyway, pre-COVID, we found ourselves needing to collect at least 13,000 units of blood across the country in order to support patients in need. And every day we're installing about 1,000 to 1,100 smoke alarms. We like to provide families with the security of knowing how to escape a fire, being alerted if there's a fire by having working detectable smoke alarms. And that's something that we go boots on the ground into the community and installing and educating right there in their homes. Every day, we're supporting 13,000 military members. And that support to the military is also supporting their families and supporting veterans. And that's whether it's getting someone, out of, not necessarily out of an assignment, but getting one of our troops back home, in the face of an emergency where they have to be pulled out of duty. We provide emotional and financial assistance to veterans and those families in need as well. And I think the last few points, again, just to really put it in perspective, the magnitude of this mission, every day, 621,000 measles and rubella vaccinations are delivered across the world. So that's not just here in the United States, but we do provide measles and rubella vaccinations in some of the underdeveloped countries where we still have babies and children dying from diseases that have been essentially eradicated, here from our country. So that is a big part of what we do globally. And last but not least, every day we're preparing at least 13,000 people with life-saving skills. And that's the CPR, first aid training, babysitters training. We get our young people prepared for really good decision-making and leadership skills that transition into, their first little careers as babysitters. And so our commitment to the community, it's on your street, it's in your neighborhood, it's around the corner, it's across the state, and it's across the world. And that's the essence of our mission here at the American Red Cross.
What a beautiful mission, and how, encompassing, and how much larger than just donating blood. Yes. Not that that is a small task, and not that that is, the least important one of them, but you just really expanded that idea of what the Red Cross is and what you guys do, and why we need to pay attention to it, not just wait for something to happen so that then it's like, oh, the Red Cross is going to come, right? It's like we need to support it. For the Red Cross to come, we need to support it. We need to be involved. We need to be part of it. And exactly that's, that there's at least one opportunity that I want to focus on right now that we can help the Red Cross, that we can support the Red Cross. There is a severe blood shortage right now. Miosha, tell us what that means, right? Tell us what it means that there is a blood shortage and why it is important that we get it back to a non-shortage level, I guess. I don't know that do you guys ever have like a enough supply? Like, I just, when I was trying to make this question, I was like, I wonder if they ever have like an overflow of blood or anything like that. So help us understand what that really means and why it's important that we support and that we try to go and donate blood today.
Absolutely. And thank you for asking that question, Chris. I think that question that you posed about, do we ever have enough blood, is a question that runs through the minds of so many. And that, I think, is one of the thoughts that maybe prevent folks from stepping up, because they're like, oh, I'm sure folks are donating, they've got plenty of blood. But the reality is, we tend to work with a 3 to 5 day supply worth of blood on the shelves in general, which is never really truly enough, but it's stable. And that's why we run blood drives every day. Now, in the face of a severe shortage, what this means is we don't have enough blood to provide the support to the patients in need. And that's for a couple of reasons. This shortage is a different look of what a shortage looks like, because we're still recovering from the impact of COVID, where we lost hundreds of thousands of blood drives across the country. And of course, that kind of set us back. But at the same time, elective surgeries were also taken off of the table. So we didn't have the extreme need, but then there was plasma, you know, with COVID. So we still needed to figure out how to survive and still save lives in the face of uncertainty, which was a global pandemic. So we've been recovering since 2019. And this particular shortage is so severe because we actually have an increase in trauma. And 20 to 40% of the trauma deaths that are happening right now are a result of hemorrhaging or excessive bleeding. And that means there's not enough blood in the hospitals. And today there's a great demand for the blood because you still have patients battling cancer. You still have patients that have been battling sickle cell disease, whether we have a pandemic or not. So you do have a patient population that was almost hit threefold with the pandemic, because a lot of the typical healthcare was interrupted due to that. So in light of the increase in the demand and the lack of blood drives and the decrease in the number of folks that were donating, it's led us to where we are now, which is now we have less than a half a day worth of blood on the shelves. And that is terrifying, you know, as far as I'm concerned, because that means, you know, physicians will find themselves in a position having to make decisions or delay as long as they can, you know, the cancer treatment or the surgery that was once elective that's now required because the condition or the disease has advanced. So we have a group of patients that are now coming back since we're opening back up into the world after COVID with more severe conditions than they would have seen about a year ago. And those conditions require blood. So that's where we've been. You know, over the last 3 months alone, we've issued over 75,000 products, more than we would have expected this time, say back in 2019. We kind of have to look at 2020 as an outlier because of the circumstances that got us there. But in general, we're seeing a higher demand and not enough supply. And so that creates this tipping point for the hospitals, because now they're not going to have access to that precious blood. And unfortunately, we can't make blood in a lab. The only way we can really do this, and you hit this also, you hit the nail on the head. Our mission is only possible if folks support us. We're only able to really make the impact that we strive to make through the generosity of our volunteers and, of course, our donors, whether they're blood donors or financial donors. That is the glue that keeps this mission possible. So, as you said, this is one thing we kind of have control over, right? This is the one thing that we can look within ourselves and find a way to give back and support our community as we're all recovering from the impact of COVID. There's still a group of folks facing death and looking for hope that are relying on blood products. So one blood donation can save up to three lives. And that's why we say superheroes in the world of blood, they wear Band-Aids. They wear Coflex on their arm. And that's equivalent to a cape for us, because that person made the decision to give back, you know. And the thing with conditions like cancer, they continue to grow. They continue to really impact and plague the Black and Hispanic and Latino communities more than any other demographic in the country, which means these communities are going to need more blood than anyone. So our goal is to raise awareness that blood cannot be manufactured and we can't save it. So that's why we'll never have a surplus or a stockpile, because it's perishable. We have to transfuse that blood once it's gone through our testing, and blood itself lasts about 42 days. So this is why there's this ongoing revolving door of the need. And I think another thing for people to understand is that a unit of blood is one unit, one donor, but most patients require 10 to 50 units of blood, depending on their condition. So can you imagine what that means in the world of blood donors? So for us, we're really working to raise awareness and ring the alarm that this is something that our communities can actually make an impact. And all it takes is less than an hour of your time. And like you, I've gotten referred multiple times over iron. And that's very common in certain populations. Some of us tend to have lower iron, which means we'll have to either work harder to prepare to donate by eating some other things. But I will tell you, I can eat all the spinach in the world and I still might, you know, have that finger prick and got my finger stabbed for nothing because now I can't donate blood. But it's a small sacrifice. It's a small investment into life and community by donating blood in terms of the time that you're investing. But it's huge for that child or that patient that's in the hospital waiting and asking their mom, is the blood here yet? Am I going to make it? And I've seen those patients. I've looked in their eyes. I've seen the fear and the panic at the thought of the blood not being there to save that child or to save that mother or to save that newborn baby she just delivered. But the call to action is to really engage our communities of color because there's been a huge decrease in participation, whether it's just volunteering, if you've got valuable, you know, your time, which is very valuable, but investing time and giving back to the community can be in the form of donating blood, which is needed. And then of course, you know, we're always looking for folks to just help us deliver the mission, whether they're, you know, in the community and in helping out for Sound the Alarm, which is in installing those smoke detectors and joining us to really just make our community stronger. But the overarching purpose of where we are today is to really just remind people that we can't make blood in the lab, and patients relying on cancer treatment or a blood transfusion because they are battling sickle cell disease or they need an organ transplant, none of that's happening without blood. And I don't know about you or the listeners, but I don't know anyone that doesn't know someone that's been impacted by cancer. And then even within that circle, I don't know many people that doesn't know someone that's been impacted by something like sickle cell disease, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. But that's really the story here. We need folks to be willing to give blood because that's the only thing that will be able to save those lives in the hospitals. We're unable to come up with a workaround, basically, for something like that. So,
thank you for bringing two things up. Reminding us, one, that, you know, because we were so focused on COVID, it did not mean that other diseases just stopped. They were like, oh, we're on a break. We take a vacation now. We'll be back. Let us know when COVID's away, and then that's when we'll come back.
We're on quarantine right now. We'll be back.
So thanks for bringing it back, you know, to our minds that we had all of this diseases already. We had all of these conditions already, and they didn't go away. We just kind of like stopped looking at them and focusing on them because we had something more prevalent. So yes, rightfully so, right? But the reality for those who are affected and dealing with it did not change. They still needed the blood. They still needed the medicine. They still needed to go to the doctor. And like you said, I mean, for many of them, that was not a reality. That was not a possibility for some time. And by the time they came back, their situation had gotten worse and then they needed more blood, right? Well, on the other hand, we had the drives constantly happen. Well, distancing came, we couldn't be together. Unfortunately, we can't donate through Wi-Fi yet. I you know, there's not a way that we can do this online. So the supply, you know, the need was still there, but we were not supplying it. It was just relying on whatever the Red Cross already had. So that's how that shortage is happening, right? Just so we can paint that picture. But the thing that really struck me of everything that you just said, Naomi Osho, was the fact that You talked about a kid, you talked about a person, you talked about, you know, that human, right, that is in the hospital needing that blood. I think we disconnect. I think, you know, it's we tend to do this as humans. It's really funny. Unless we have a face and a name, then we think that it's just a process and we kind of like disengage from it and disconnect. And it's like, oh, it's just blood. It's just liquid and it's going somewhere. It's going to another person. It's affecting a family. It's affecting a life. You just told us that you've seen children and their fear and their anxiety, even, you know, just waiting to see if this blood that they need is going to come. And, you know, I want to talk about the different types of blood for a moment, right? And sure. Not get super scientific about it, but really about the need, right? Like, just understand the different types of blood that there are. And are there ones that are more common that are needed more? You know, you talked about race just a little bit ago and how different races are impacted differently. So I want to elevate that. I want to definitely, for everybody who's watching and, you know, Latinos who are watching this conversation, Blacks who are watching this conversation, whites too. I mean, everybody, Asians, because everybody, we all need to go and donate, but let's help paint that diversity picture of blood and, you know, with the types and the diverse, backgrounds of blood that are needed as well.
That's a great question. And I promise not to get too in the weeds or too sciencey about this, but I think that's a really important conversation to have because blood type is like eye color. It's inherited. It's a trait that's passed down genetically from parents. Sure, we all bleed red, but there are types, you know, we all have organs, but my kidney might not be a match for you if you needed that. So our goal is to maintain a diverse blood supply to ensure that the right blood product is available at the right time. So blood types, typically people think A, they think B, and they think O. Those are the major blood groups, but there are patients with rare blood types. And a lot of those rare components of the blood are relevant to a certain ethnic group. So beyond blood type, depending on the condition, there's a need and a requirement to do some additional matching. And that's where having a blood match from a donor of the same race or similar ethnicity is really important. And when you think about the population, so for instance, let's just take how we just said, we really need all folks like ears tuned in to kind of hear this message, because even though the focus is on engaging more of our diverse population, there's still not enough people donating. Roughly 38% of the population is eligible to donate. And within that 38%, that chunk of the pie, only 3%.
I want to stop you right there. We need blood for 100% of the population. And you know, let's think of this as a pie, right?
That's right.
We are all in this pie, but only a slice of it is eligible to
That's
donate.
Right.
Only 38%, only a very small slice.
That's right.
Is eligible to donate. I really want to elevate that because it's important for us to understand. So we all should be going out and making sure and seeing whether we are, first of all, figuring out whether we are in that slice of the pie.
That's
that
right.
Can donate, because the rest is almost, you know, 70% of the rest, right? Cannot even be part of that slice.
That's
it's
right.
Important. It's important to really bring that 38% to the front, because we all depend on the slice.
We all depend on the slice. And I think that's the part. And once again, you said this, connecting a face and a name, because somebody along the way has a family member battling cancer. But when people think cancer, they don't realize it's the platelets keeping those patients alive. And based on the American Cancer Society, you know, 1 in 3 Hispanic people will be diagnosed and impacted with cancer. And that number, you know, for Black Americans and African Americans is just as startling. So some things are out of our control, right? But knowing that the trend is trending upward for those conditions, it's imperative to pay into the pot now, right? Go ahead and pay it forward by contributing to the blood supply. And then, like you said, let's find out if you're eligible. You have to start, don't assume you're not eligible because you're diabetic or you have high blood pressure or maybe even hypertension. These are all metabolic conditions. And if they are under control, like if you're, you know, treating those properly, donating blood will not impact those conditions. And I think that's one of the reasons so many people just assume they're not eligible. But we know based on the demographics in terms of just the way the world works that 38% of us on this in this country are eligible, but only 3% from that 38% are actively engaged, regular, loyal blood donors. So 3 million blood donors are essentially keeping folks alive. And like you said, we need to grow that. I would love to see 10%, even 10% of that 38% portion contributing to this. I look at donating blood just like I do something like voting. You know, it's a way to move the community forward. It's a way to contribute to the landscape of where things are going. And in healthcare, contributing to that landscape is by contributing your blood, because there's going to be someone that might need a match closer to their ethnicity because of the nature of the condition and how many blood transfusions they may need. So if you or I got into a car accident today and it was severe and we are, you know, going into trauma and we're going to need blood, that's that O negative blood. They don't have time to match us. Our lives are on the line. So that O negative, which is universal, it doesn't matter what ethnicity that's coming from, because that's kind of a one and done. That's a one-time procedure. But for cancer patients and sickle cell patients, they're going in multiple times a month. So the more we can match it, the better their outcome is for the patient that we're looking to support. So it's our mission to make sure the blood supply matches our population. And there's a lot of historical and underlying factors as to why the Latino and the Black community have really been a little, I don't know about that. And there's a lot of historical context there with the lack of trust and just the lack of trust that was justified. You know, it's not like these communities decided we're just going to be on an island and not give back to the community, but it's always that question of, what's really happening here? And we can tell you what's really happening. You know, you donate that blood, it's tested. You're told when that process is complete, you find out your blood type. You might even find out some other underlying health related things that you would not have known if you didn't go in and try to donate blood, because we do give you that pre-screening, that pre-health screening before you donate. So you get to find out your blood type. You get to find out if there are any components of your blood that you really should know about as you go through life. And then you get to know where your blood is going. So if you have our blood donor app, which is available in any app store, you just put in blood donor app or Red Cross blood, you will find out when and where your blood is going. And you get to keep up with that on your mobile device. So it makes it even more real and relatable. I mean, I've had blood donors tell me they've been contacted by patients that thank them. And typically we don't share that information. That's a decision that happens, you know, in the hospital, or if the donor, you know, has made themselves available for that, because it's all confidential. We don't share the information of the patient receiving the blood, but we let you know it's a pediatric patient or an adult patient. And we let you know the nature of why that blood is being used, whether it's for a surgical procedure or it's for chemotherapy or, you know, for an exchange for a patient with sickle cell disease. So that's kind of the way that pie works, right? It's not representing the population right now. The population, 13% of the population is Black or African-American. 76% of the population is Caucasian. You know, and then within that demographic, the Latino and Hispanic community continues to grow. And so that's the fastest growing population. And we don't have enough of blood to represent those entities. So we just want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence and engaging these communities by reaching out and making sure they know, hey, we're neutral. We have no political position. We're not a part of any of the medical, you know, experiments that's taken place over the many years that's caused a lot of the distrust with the communities. We are here to support the community in any and every way we can. And part of that is by making sure patients right here in our own backyard, in our own neighborhood, maybe even on your own street, has another day with their family and improve quality of life. Another opportunity to just live. And those are not things that we can manufacture. So to the blood donors, I am always in awe, you know, at the generosity of people, because I have faith in humanity. And I know that once people understand why it's so important, people are more willing to give it a try. You know, because nobody likes needles. You know, that's usually the big thing we hear. Well, I'm afraid of needles. Well, I see you have 4 tattoos, but I won't go into that. So I do remind people that most people, you know, are hesitant about needles. That's why it's a sacrifice. You take a deep breath, you look away. Our phlebotomists are exceptional. All they do all day is draw blood. So it's not like going to the hospital and you're getting that nurse that might not have done it in weeks. Sometimes things can be a little rusty. But when you're doing this every day, all day, on dozens and dozens and hundreds of people, you know, our donors have great experiences when they come. We're sensitive to the fact that it might be their first time, or they might, you know, really have a fear of needles, and they've faced their fears by saying it's worth it. There's a kid that's counting on a donor that, you know, that donor might be me. You know, there's an adult, or, you know, someone's grandparent waiting for blood because they're battling a condition that's out of their control. So yeah. That's our goal, is to
that make connection. Sure
we match it. That's right.
That connection. I mean, it really comes back down to that connection, right? Of the impact that I can make. And I think that in this past year and a half, more than ever, we all really wonder, well, how can I help? How can I make an impact? Because we saw a lot of suffering. We saw a lot of realities came up. And in many ways, we felt powerless. In many ways, we felt that there was nothing that we could do. Well, here's something real you can do today. And this is something that has, you know, the power to impact, like Miyoshi was saying, your neighbor, your family member, somebody that you don't know anything about in the other end of the world. I mean, really, and you can track it. How cool is that? You can actually see where it goes, and you can have that full connection and, you know, get that full circle. And then you go and do it again. This is something you have control over. This is something that you can do. If you're part of that little slice, I'm still in awe of how small that slice is. And even, you know, I mean, when we think about it, it's already tiny, but then you say that's only 3% of that. I mean, we're really taking more than almost all of it away.
Yeah.
We need everybody who's in that big slice to go and start donating blood today. Let's talk about the rest of the pie, Miyoshi, here for a second before we transition into sickle cell, because I do want to get there. It's important to get that information out. But for the rest of the pie, what are other ways, right? If I'm not in that small 38% who can donate, but I am in this other big piece right here, right? What can I do? How can I support the Red Cross today?
Thank you for asking that, because no one's off the hook. No, I'm kidding. So for those that are not in that very special slice that can donate blood, they can still make a huge impact by hosting a blood drive. If they are a member of a church or a community center, or they have access to an organization that would be willing to support the community, they can host a blood drive. They can also reach out to the American Red Cross and just be a part of the mission by signing up to volunteer. There's a huge need for diverse volunteers, because a lot of the communities we're going into, the volunteers that's there to provide that relief may not all look like the community that they're there to support. So it's important to make sure the world knows we're inclusive. Diversity is a very critical pillar to our entire mission. And we are working around the clock to make sure we are showing that in everything that we do. So I think for folks to give back in that way, we have a desperate need for volunteers that are also a reflection of the communities that we really desperately want to go in and support. But when you don't have that community liaison to say, hey, they're good, I trust them, you know, they're good to go, then sometimes there's some hesitancy there. So the more volunteers that are on the ground with us and delivering this mission, the more likely we are to see more cohesiveness in everything that we do. And I'm so proud to be a part of this organization because we have a Latino engagement team, a Black engagement team, an Asian American engagement team, because the purpose of these teams is to make sure no voice is left behind and that all voices are at the table and that communities that are at a disadvantage to some degree, gets that additional support and resources that we need and deserve. So that's why making sure internally we are living this mission, it's important because that's how it's reflected into the community. So anybody that's got some extra time, you know, and there are a lot of perks to joining our mission and becoming a volunteer, we need you. If you're bilingual, we need you. You know, if you are an influencer and you have access to the Black, African-American, the Asian and the Latino community, we need you. Those are the communities that we're really trying to make sure understand that we're here and we're here for them. And we can be here for them in a variety of ways. If they cannot donate blood, they could help us on disaster. They could help us by training folks up with CPR. And those are not all unpaid. We have paid and unpaid. So we want to continue to diversify our organization so that all voices are at the table and all needs are being met.
Because we need diverse types of blood, as Miyosh explained to us earlier. There's a real reason why, you know, we want folks who look different to come and donate blood, because we all look different. We are all made different, and we need to try to match that as best as possible to give somebody a better chance of recovery, a better chance of quality life. So please contact the Red Cross today. Get in touch with them. Miyosha, where can they get information? Where can they get in touch with you today? Find out about upcoming drives or opportunities to get involved if it's not donating, but volunteering.
Absolutely. So they can reach out to redcrossblood.org or they can go to redcross.org for volunteer opportunities. For understanding and learning about blood drives in the community, they can just go to redcrossblood.org and type in a zip code. If anyone is interested or willing to consider hosting a blood drive for the community, they can reach out to me directly. I do support the entire region. I've worked closely with the team at Howard County Community College. We've had a great partnership over many years, but we want to be able to make sure folks know blood drives are accessible because it's about accessibility as well. And blood drives in the community are meant to make it convenient. Folks can go to their church. They can go to the community center. They can go to a business that's donated some space for us to be there. And I think one other thing I want people to understand is that an example that I gave, if we were to get in a car accident today and we're going to trauma, or if we were a part of a mass shootout or an act of violence, because that's very common these days. We can't rule out folks getting ran over or, a mass shooting event, which leads to excessive blood loss. Type O positive blood is the most transfused blood type, but O negative is the universal type. And that's what they're using in those trauma environments. And, the thing with the O type blood is that more than half of all Latinos in the U.S. have type O blood. They single-handedly can be the lifeline of just sustaining, you know, so many conditions. And the only other group that's close to that is African-Americans. About half of all African-Americans in this country have type O blood, and more than half of Latinos in this country have type O blood. So we need those donors at the table so that we can have a strong and stable blood supply. And then Asian Americans have a high propensity of type B blood. which is critical for premature and other, you know, premature babies and other conditions that really rely on that type. It's a very common blood type for African Americans and Asian Americans, the B negative or B blood type in general. So there's a need because certain groups tend to have certain frequencies of blood types. And the only way we can ever really kind of level that out is by making sure we have those donors. So download the app, call us at 1-800-RED-CROSS, go online to www.redcross.org for volunteer opportunities, or go to www.redcrossblood.org to learn about how you can donate blood, how to prepare. We give you tips. We make sure, you know, we provide you with enough resources so that you know what to expect. And then we want you to come back. You know, every 56 days, a person can donate blood. So we want people to think about a few times a year, I'm saving lives. I'm a hero. The heroes have off days. The hero gets 56 days off, and then they come back again and save more lives because the work of the hero is just never done. So that's pretty much where we stand. Oh, and you can even go to Alexa. If you have that Echo device, you can say, Alexa, I want to donate blood. And then Alexa will guide you to blood drives in your area as well.
I love that schedule. You work one day, you get 56 days off. I mean, come on, we all need that kind of job. We all want to be part of this. We can all be heroes. It doesn't take a huge commitment necessarily. You get more days off than you do in action. I do want to transition our conversation here a little bit. You've mentioned sickle cell a few times, and I know that at least one time I was asked about sickle cell, and the lady must have seen phasing me because she was like, you would know if you had it, your face is telling me you've never heard of it. And I think that's the experience for a lot of people, that unless you've been engaged with it in some way, it's a new word. It's a new thing. Help us understand what sickle cell means and the prevalence of it.
Absolutely. Thank you. So sickle cell, what that means is that your red blood cells have taken on a sickle shape. So that's where that name comes from. But just to give a little bit of history on sickle cell disease, it's actually the most common genetic disease in the United States, but it's a world disease. Sickle cell disease is a very common condition for folks with ancestry from Africa, South America, Central America, the Middle East, and the Mediterranean, and then India. Those geographical areas, those are the areas where the sickle gene or that mutation is very prevalent and very common. However, in the United States, we no longer need that protection from malaria because it was a mutation, you know, first emerged in Africa 5,000 years ago. And then it popped up in India a couple thousand years after that, and it just continued to emerge throughout different pockets of the world. But it was really the body's way of trying to protect us from malaria. Folks with that sickled trait don't get impacted by malaria. But as we know, malaria in a lot of areas has been eradicated. So we're left with that mutation in our blood profile because it's genetic. You don't get to just say, oh, I'm done now. So it's a genetic disease, the most common genetic disease in the United States. About 1 in 13 Black African Americans carry the trait. 1 in 16,000 Latino babies are born with the actual disease, which means Latinos carry the trait just as if we're looking percentage-wise, it's a very prevalent trait. And you'll find it in non-white Latino community more often than you would the white Latino community. However, you will still see it. You know, it can pop up. It's not off of the table completely. And what happens when you have sickle cell disease is your body is not getting oxygen because the blood can't carry that hemoglobin now. It's clumped up. It's causing extreme pain. And that is how, you know, 2-3-year-olds ends up with having a stroke, the same stroke that a 70-year-old will have, which will impact the brain. They're going to need blood transfusions for the rest of their life. And that's why having diverse blood is really critical because patients with sickle cell disease, and in this country, that's going to be the Black population and the Latino population, both heavily impacted by this disease, they're going to need blood transfusions on a regular basis. it may not happen, you know, until a certain point in their life, but it's inevitable and it will happen. So sorry about that, Chris, but it's one of the things that, it's one of the things that we understand is not going anywhere. There's no cure for sickle cell disease, but most people don't know about it. Like you said, unless you've been told that you have the trait, or, you know, you know somebody personally that's battled sickle cell disease, it's very mysterious for many people. But that's a little, that's strange, right? Because it's the first discovered disease in this country. Yet most people don't know much about it, or anything for that matter. So our goal is to make sure folks know this is real. You know, we've got over 100,000 Americans in this country, and that's just the folks presenting at the hospital. A lot of people in the Black and Hispanic community just tough it out and suffer in silence because of two reasons. Discrimination, they might face in the healthcare community, or just not having access to the proper healthcare coverage to go in, you know, and get that treatment. So a lot of people go into the emergency room instead of having, you know, their oncologist or hematologist or their primary care physician that has them on a treatment plan. So a sickle cell crisis is what leads that person to the hospital, because now your red blood cells are causing pain from your head literally to your toe. Wherever there's blood in your body, you are in excruciating pain, and your organs start to fail. The only thing that could stop that is transfusing in new, good, healthy red blood cells as we transfuse the ones that are sickled. You can either get a full exchange, which is take everything out and put in something new, or a partial exchange, which means we caught the crisis in time where a lot of the blood hasn't completely sickled yet. So we get a few units of good whole red blood cells in there, and it'll, you know, give relief to the point where this person can now go on and live their life. And that's why we need to make sure people understand blood transfusions is the most common form of treatment for patients with sickle cell disease. And it's the reason why we want to make sure folks severely impacted by it understand that they are the key. They are the key to not only saving lives in the community, but they're also key to being the match for that patient that needs an exact or a close ethnic match having that crisis. So we need to make sure folks are aware of sickle cell disease and how it impacts. And if you donate blood and you identify your race, we are testing those blood donors. We're testing that blood for the sickle cell trait. Many people don't know that they have it. And it takes two people having the trait to produce a child with sickle cell disease. And it's a genetic disease, so there's no way to avoid it. But if you at least know that you have the trait, you're prepared, you have understanding, you're not caught off guard and finding something out much later in life. We're providing this valuable insight to the community, because you can't just go to the doctor and say, test me for sickle cell. First of all, it's very expensive. Second of all, they're going to be like, okay, we need a reason. Like, you don't just come in and say, oh, you know, I just want to know if I have the trait. So we've invested in these communities by being able to provide this very valuable insight. And that's something I think will go a long way with people just having more ability to manage their health and have that knowledge of their health status.
A question that comes to mind, Miyosha, hearing, you know, this explanation right now is, you said, you know, maybe somebody has the trait, but they don't know that they have it. So just because you carry the trait does not mean that you necessarily are developing sickle cell. Is that true? Just be having it and carrying it, and then the risk then becomes for your kids. Like if you decided to have kids, is that how that works?
That is a big component of how it works. The science is now in that shows it's so important to know if you have the trait, because overexertion and high altitude in certain conditions can cause death for people with the sickle cell trait. And they go through life just thinking, oh, you know, I tend to get tired more than other people. And I, you know, we shake things off and suck it up as, oh, that's just a one-off. And in reality, there are there are some steps that people with the trait should take. Kind of like if you know that your family is prone to heart disease and diabetes, like you're going to take certain steps to make sure you don't put yourself in that position to now be high risk. But if you have the trait, you'll never get the disease, but you can still have a couple of complications throughout your life that research is now showing have been a direct connection to the sickle cell trait.
If you have the sickle cell trait, can you donate blood?
Yes, you can. That's a great question. If you have the sickle cell trait, you can still donate blood, but we won't transfuse that blood to a sickle cell patient. That blood is going to a cancer patient. It's going to a trauma patient. It's going to, you know, any other patient that might need blood except for the sickle cell patient.
Excellent. So don't let that stop you from donating blood. If you know that you have the trait and you've been holding off on donating, you can. You can go and you can donate as long as you meet the requirements to donate blood. That should not stop you from doing that. We've talked a lot about diversity. We've, you know, throughout our conversation, it's come as a very strong topic. And I think, you know, we have about 7 more minutes left here. I think it's really important to try to summarize the main points that we've been trying to make around diversity and donating blood and the importance of having a diverse blood supply. Miosha, if you could summarize our conversation, if you could maybe talk to somebody who just came in, they just grabbed their phone and they just, you know, caught our conversation and they're like, wait a minute, what is this diversity in blood? Like, what are you talking about? What would you want them to know? What would you want them to keep with them after this conversation?
I would want people to know that the American Red Cross is in desperate need of blood donors of all ethnicities. All eligible donors are encouraged to please come out and give blood or platelets in order to increase the diversity of the blood supply. And I will want people to understand that you can't manufacture blood. Blood cannot be made in the lab. It can only be given by another human being. So this isn't the type of thing that we can just turn a blind eye to, because at some point in our life, the studies show that every one of us will either know someone or we will be the one that actually needs blood in our lifetime. So because cancer is so prevalent in the Black and the Hispanic community, it's also important to know these communities rely on blood products, and we're using these blood products pretty regularly. So we want to be able to know that, hey, my community is contributing to this blood supply. We're all paying into this pot of humanity. So donate blood. Find out your blood type by donating blood. Save 3 lives when you donate blood. And you feel so great knowing that you literally just saved the life of a person or up to 3 people that are counting on good, decent, committed humanitarians like us to give blood.
I'm going to have to change the title of this conversation. I said, donate blood, save a life, but it's 3 lives. It's 3 lives that you can save with your blood donation today. Miosha, now that we are reopening, now that we are starting to see that we can be together again, how can people start going back to drives and donating? Where can we get that information? Where can we connect with you guys and just keep up with all the work that you guys are doing and getting involved ourselves as well?
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. So the best way to really find out where to go to donate blood, I would start by, if you're savvy on the computer, go to www.redcrossblood.org. And at the very top, you'll see a little tiny window that says find a drive. In that little box, you put in your zip code and it'll show you all the blood drives that are within a 10-mile radius of your area. And that's going to be the best way to actually find a blood drive that's going to be convenient, because we all work, folks have obligations. And even during the pandemic, because blood was still needed, we didn't stop running blood drives. We just instituted some really, I would say some pretty extensive safety protocols, you know, that made it safe. We limited the amount of folks that can come in. We're still operating to some degree under those safety precautions, although the world is opening back up and folks are anxious to get back out, we're still asking those that are not immunized to wear a mask when you come out to donate blood. And those that have been fully immunized, you know, we're not mandating that those individuals wear the masks. We're trusting that when they tell us that they're vaccinated, that it's Scout's honor. But if we're running in a location and our host still requires everyone to wear a mask, we're all masked up from staff to donors to respect their policy if they're opening their doors to us to run our community blood drive in their space. And so that's really the one thing to know. It's safe to donate blood. We're still operating under social distance. So we're not letting our blood drives be really overpacked, you know, standing room only. That's not happening. And we're encouraging donors to make an appointment. That's the other thing, folks. They hear about a blood drive. They're like, I'm just going to go. I'm show up. And we had this even at your campus at your, you know, Howard County. And that was great back before COVID because we didn't have the need to say, you can't come in here. We already have five people. So we encouraged folks to make an appointment so that they don't have a long wait time and they know that they're supposed to be there and they're not showing up at the same time where five other people were scheduled to donate. So that's the best thing. I'll say it one more time, www.redcrossblood.org. At the very top, there's a little window, find a drive, pop in your zip code. If you are willing and able and open to joining our mission by becoming a volunteer, go to redcross.org and click on the tab that says volunteer. And there's all the things that you need there to get yourself registered and get yourself started. And it would be one of the best things that you can do to support your community and to support humanity.
One question that maybe some people are asking is, if I had COVID, can I donate blood?
That's such a great question. I can't believe I didn't touch on it. Yes, if you had COVID, you can donate blood. And I just want to share this with the listeners. You know, one thing that we did during, you know, the height of the pandemic was we started testing folks for the antibody. We started testing folks that probably had no idea that they came in contact with COVID. So at one point, we were testing all the blood donors and we were screening for that antibody. And we were reaching out to those donors to be plasma donors because folks that had fully recovered from COVID, and this might come back at the rate things are going with the Delta variant, we're not sure. But we're prepared. So if you've recovered from COVID and you're willing to donate plasma, that's another emergency approved treatment for severe COVID cases. So if you've had it, it's not, you can't contract it through blood. It's a respiratory related condition. So you are clear. In fact, we encourage you to come out and donate blood. And it's a high chance that you might be able to save four lives because your blood might, your plasma might be used for a patient that is suffering from a severe case of COVID.
So if you have any reservations, I guess really at the end of the day, if you have any questions, if you have any reservations, you know, Miosha said she touched on so many things today, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, COVID, sickle cell, and you know, that's just a slice of that big list that I'm sure the Red Cross has. If you have any questions, if you are disqualifying yourself, don't do that. Don't disqualify yourself. Go to the Red Cross, go and find out for sure whether you can or cannot donate. If you're not able to donate, if you're not in that special slice, that 38% slice, there's other ways in which you can support the Red Cross. So I encourage everybody to just find the way in which you can support the Red Cross. Maybe you are in that 38% and we want that 3% to keep growing. We want more of that slice to start donating. We need that blood. There's a big shortage. There's a critical shortage right now. We all have blood in ourselves. We all need blood. Maybe you don't need it today. There's no saying that you may not need it tomorrow or that somebody you know might need it tomorrow. So let's do our part. Let's donate blood. Let's become involved with the good work that the Red Cross is doing in any way that we can, donating our time, donating our blood, donating our resources. Miosha, I can't thank you enough for all of this information. This conversation felt like I had so many more questions for you and We couldn't fit it all in just 1 hour. So we may have to do this again. But thank you so much for all the great work that you guys are doing, for all this information, and for really giving us an opportunity to make an impact, to save lives, not one, many lives, three lives, maybe even four lives, depending on how your blood is used. So thank you so much for coming today. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we wrap our conversation up today?
Thank you so much. I just want to thank you. And I'll just make one last plea, one special request. We're making a very specific plea to the Latino and the Black and the Asian community to please, please, please donate blood when and wherever you can, because there's a huge need for your participation in order for us to have a diverse pool of blood for patients in need. And I just want to thank you for having me here. This has been an absolute privilege and an absolute pleasure and honor to be here with you today and your listeners, who are all fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been great to have you here with me. And I was going to say, if you have friends who would benefit from this conversation in Spanish, have them tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. I'll be having this conversation again in Spanish, because we want to reach our Latino population. We need Latinos to go and support this. We need to donate our blood. We need to show up. We really need to show up. So we're going to have this conversation in Spanish tomorrow. In the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Share this with your family, with your friends, with your neighbors, with everybody and anybody that you have on Facebook. Have a beautiful rest of your day. Support the Red Cross. And until next time, I am Cris Oviedo. Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.